Okay, folks, this is Elvin Shamroth here. Once again, welcome. This is our last teleseminar before the exam starts tomorrow. It's not our last teleseminar for the year. We carry on through December, I believe, into December. But I know a lot of you are getting anxious. The first group are starting tomorrow. And so I understand there's a high level of anxiety, but I just want to share with you just one basic principle. You're going to have a conversation with your examiners. Yes, they do have a lot of sway, and they can really impact your lives tremendously based on if they pass or fail you. But the more you can see them as colleagues with whom you're having a conversation, and the more you can just be comfortable to talk to them and share with them your thinking processes as to your management decisions, the better you're going to present, the better you're going to do. So just be yourselves. Be comfortable. With that out the way, let's get straight on with the teleconference. We have today one person who has submitted a case which actually is a very important case in terms of oral exam technique. I'm pleased this was presented. So we're going to discuss this and keep it relevant to everyone listening in. So let's see, Matilda. Matilda, are you there? Hello, Matilda?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for volunteering and presenting your case. Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay.
And I have your email in front of me, but I would like you to present the case that you're concerned about as succinctly as you can so that everyone listening in can get a feel for what's going on.
Okay, so this is a patient who's a 55-year-old female, G5P3, with a complex medical history, who presented to me with an episode of postmenopausal bleeding. Transvaginal ultrasound had already been done, which showed a 9-millimeter endometrial stripes and uterine fibroids. I attempted to do, and she was, other than that, asymptomatic. I attempted to do an EMB in the office, but it was slightly challenging, and I did not get any endometrial cells. We have a small procedure unit where we can do small hysteroscopy, so I referred her to one of my colleagues who attempted a hysteroscopy DNC, but encountered some synechiae, tried to get a sampling and could not. We joint decision with the patient and that provider, was placed on a short course of progesterone. I took her back to the operating room shortly after that, about a month. After that,
which operating room did you take her back to? To your small surgery,
the main operating room.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, the main operating room. And when I went inside of the uterus, when I brought her to the operating room, we had planned to use ultrasound, and I had also placed on, told her to take some Cytotec the night before. In case there was any cervical stenosis encountered. I went in and I was actually able to get into the cavity pretty easily. Noticed a semi-occlusal fibroid. I was able to resect that completely. I was able to see the endometrial cavity with no clear abnormalities other than the fibroid.
Sorry, did you say you resected the synechiae or the fibroids?
The fibroid, because when I went in, it was really like maybe there was a small portion of synechiae, but it was not enabling me from entering the cavity and seeing everything.
I was able
to see the entire cavity. Then I got some endometrial curettings, again, all under ultrasound. Pathology revealed a benign leiomyoma, but I was still not able to get any endometrium in my endometrial biopsy.
And I'm almost certain I know the answer to the question I'm going to pose, but I want you to raise it. Your concern for this case is?
One is the no endometrial cells, which I have an answer to in my follow-up with her as to why I am, not going and jumping to a hysterectomy, which I offered her. And my other one is the progesterone, which I know is very
iffy as to why you should do that. And in retrospect, I would have probably had her stop it. But.
Excellent. So just let me give you a pat on the back, because you have projected, and folks, what I'm going to say to Matilda is relevant to all of you folks who are thinking the same way. She has an advantage over all of you because she knows the case. She's thought about it a lot. But Matilda has predicted the likely questions for a case such as this superbly well. Those were exactly the two questions I had for you. And the point that I want to make, for those of you listening in, if you picked up on either of those two, you're well on your way to being good at predicting the questions on your own case list. And that's key. That really is key. So I want to encourage all of you to be doing that if you haven't already done so. So, Matilda, this is very good. And the two questions that you felt were of concern to you are exactly the two questions that I have. So let's take them one at a time. Why did you give her progesterone after the failed office biopsy? What was your thinking?
So just to say off the bat that I, in my general practice, I would not give somebody hormonal treatment without having evaluated their abnormal bleeding fully. In conversation with my colleague and the uterine synechiae, there's some he gave me the opportunity to think about putting her on a short course of progesterone to try to see if we could thin the cavity and maybe relieve some of those synechiae and be able to better enter the cavity and get a sample.
You would not have done it, but yet you still did
it. In retrospect,
but do you think your partner who suggested it is wrong for suggesting it? What I'm trying to down to is your opinion whether you feel this is correct, incorrect, or a reasonable option.
I think that he may have some success in the past. I know that there is an option of doing some course of estrogen and progesterone in premenopausal women who have found to have synechiae, and I think that was the thought process, so I don't think it's incredibly wrong, but in retrospect, I would have wanted to evaluate her cavity further before placing her on hormonal treatment.
Do you think that the administration of progesterone had anything to do with the fact that you didn't get any endometrium when you subsequently went ahead and did the hysteroscopy?
Progesterone is one of the kind of treatments for endometrial hyperplasia. So it could have been that it thinned out the endometrium, but I'm not sure.
So look, folks, and this is to you, Matilda, obviously, but for everyone, folks, this is a classical case. What Matilda's partner suggested, look, I'm not a gyn oncologist, I'm not a GYN or a minimally invasive specialist, I'm a generalist. But it seems like there is some place for that line of thinking. And if and I'm guessing about a third to 40% of you are confronting this kind of an issue. If you feel you went down a path of a certain workup or treatment plan based on input from outside, whether it's a colleague, another partner, whatever, be comfortable to say, you know, this was suggested by my partner, and he or she suggested ABC. The merits of this are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The potential problems with this are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And so I thought it was a reasonable option. Go ahead and dissect out the pros and cons of the external opinion that you're taking on. The one thing, and those of you that came, pretty much all of you came to our Definitive Board Prep course, you would have heard me say there, and I'll repeat it now, the one thing you mustn't do is throw your colleague under the bus. That's not very professional at all. So the way Matilda presented it was reasonable. And the key thing I want you to take home is be comfortable to say it was a reasonable option. I can make a good case for it, and I can make a case against it, but it's a reasonable option. And I think your response to that question was exactly spot on. So that was good. Let's move on to the second issue now, Matilda. So at the end of the day, you did your hysteroscopy. You got nothing back on the endometrium side from histology. What did you do? How did you counsel the patient?
So I counseled the patient that, of course, with postmenopausal bleeding and endometrial thickness, she is still at a risk of cancer, given that I have not been able to histologically evaluate the endometrium, and so I did recommend the hysterectomy. However, the patient really is resistant to having major surgery. I did, though, explain to her in my counseling as well that when I did my hysteroscopy, I was actually able to evaluate the cavity fully with my eyes after removing the fibroid, and that gives me some margin of reassurance that we can repeat an ultrasound and endometrial sampling in 6 months and see if we are able to get endometrial cells at that time.
So have you planned to repeat an office endometrial biopsy in 6 months?
She is going to come back to me within the next few weeks. We're just about at that 6 month range now.
If she came back for that, and you either were unsuccessful, or you got nothing back in the way of endometrial tissue, what would you offer her? And folks, look, all of you have cases on your case list of abnormal uterine bleeding and postmenopausal bleeding, and so this kind of a conversation can come to each and every one of you, because pretty much every single one of you have that kind of a case. It can also come to you as part of a structured case. So this conversation really is relevant to everyone. Matilda, go ahead. What would you do in that situation?
So again, I would counsel her that given the fact that we are unable to assess the endometrial cavity, that it is reasonable to go ahead with a definitive management with a hysterectomy, and if she was still
before we get on to that, could you not follow her with serial ultrasounds, that transvaginal ultrasounds, evaluating endometrial thickness?
Yeah, absolutely. And that would be my other option. We could continue to evaluate conservatively.
Share with you, Matilda, and everyone else listening in. That little issue, I got the sense you were well aware of it, you knew it, and you could have said it. You just didn't think of saying it. The point that I'm making is, if your examiner in this situation, me, was not energetic enough, if I'm exhausted, and I didn't follow up on that question, you wouldn't have had a second opportunity to mention that fact. So the point that I'm trying to get at here is give as much information as you can, as quickly as you can, because the examiner might not give you a second chance to get that out.
Of course.
Okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's come back to the major issue of you calling it definitive treatment. But I would turn around to you and say that, in essence, if the bleeding is not bothersome to her, but the concern for malignancy is the main issue, that you're not doing definitive treatment as much as you're doing a diagnostic hysterectomy.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Do you think that's appropriate?
Yeah, that's correct.
Do you think that's appropriate?
It's not a thing. No.
Why is it not appropriate?
I think if it's appropriate in the setting, if the patient, you know, knows that there could be a possibility, because we have not been able to evaluate the endometrium, and so she is concerned, and
I'm giving you all of that. The patient continues to have, I'm giving you a hypothetical case, continues to have irregular, occasional postmenopausal spotting. The bleeding per se is not a problem, but you're unable to definitely tell her that she does not have cancer.
Oh, yeah. For continuous spotting,
Yes?
No, I think for continuous, if she's continuing to bleed, then yes, I do have a case for, you know,
occasional
offering a hysterectomy.
She spots every 3 months. Every 2 to 3 months.
If I'm unable to find another source, then it's a reasonable option.
So you will do a hysterectomy for diagnostic purposes. Is that what you're saying?
If there's no other reason for the bleeding.
I'm giving you a clinical scenario. Are you going to go ahead and do a hysterectomy for a diagnosis of rule out hyperplasia or malignancy?
If the patient is worried about it and wants to go with that management, then it is a reasonable option.
Okay, so everyone listening in, and I'm no doubt you as well, Mitchell, probably felt a little uncomfortable with the question and the way I was posing the question. Because I'm sure all of you got a sense with my voice, the way I posed the question, I'm guessing you all felt that I didn't think it was a reasonable option. Was that your thinking, Matilda?
Right.
And that you had to go against
right.
me? Yes.
Right.
So I just did that for the sake of the exercise. I think your answer is 100% correct. But I do that because you will get the occasional question with that kind of inference, with that kind of tone, that leads you to second-guess yourself. And it's not a comfortable feeling to do that. And I'm sure you didn't feel comfortable about that, Matilda. But if you are confident about what you're saying, stand your ground. And you can acknowledge, you say, you know, this is a difficult situation to be in. And Matilda said this pretty much. But if the patient is concerned, and if I have a level of concern, I will counsel the patient accordingly. And I think under those circumstances, it is a reasonable option, as aggressive as it might be. You might want to add that little bit in to show that, you know, this is not the conservative way. This is aggressive, but in the long run, it's safe. And so that was the main issue I wanted to share with you folks, especially in the realm of postmenopausal bleeding. We've got a stenotic cervix. You get a negative or inadequate or failed endometrial biopsy, and I've no doubt several of you listening in have this kind of a case on your case list. Be comfortable to just think aloud. And you can say to the examiner, using this kind of language, you can say, you know, this was an interesting case because not for a therapeutic reason, but for a diagnostic reason, I was almost compelled to do a hysterectomy, as aggressive as that is. And then you go back and give all the background information.
Yeah.
But things like that, show the examiner that you're conservative. Show the examiner that you're concerned when you have to take a more aggressive approach. But at the end of it all, you're doing what's in the patient's best interest. And it sounds so redundant to say it, but it really is important if you get that message across. Okay? So, Matilda, you know, that's really the gist of the issue from the exam point of view. This case is nice. You presented it well. I will also tell you specifically, but also for everyone listening in, the way you heard Matilda speak, even though I criticized her on that one issue, she speaks clearly and with confidence. And I'm sure all of you listening in felt the same as I did, that she knows the pathophysiology, the disease process with which he's dealing, and she has a good understanding and insight into the management of this case of a somewhat complicated case of postmenopausal bleeding. So if you present like this for the rest of your exam, your exam is going to be a breeze. You should know that, okay? So that was really very good, Matilda. Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Matilda, that's the only case you've given me. I'm going to throw it open if you have any other questions, because we don't have any other candidates who have presented cases. So if you've got any other questions, I'm happy to take them. Just we've got a few minutes still in hand.
Let me think if there's anything specific. I'm trying to think of any of my cases that I've had trouble
with.
Okay,
go ahead. We'll give you a minute.
I can't really think of anything right now. I'm sorry. I'm like blanking.
Okay. No, I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm going to try
Thank you, though.
Works out. Sure. No, great job, by the way. Well done.
Thank you.
I'm going to open up the unmute everyone. Again, I'm going to ask you please just to make sure you're in a place where there's no background noise. And I'm going to ask people to, anyone who's interested in raising a question, to just shout out their first name. I'll acknowledge, and then we'll have that conversation. So let me unmute everyone. Here we go. Hang on. Okay, is there anyone, if you want to just shout out your first name, and I'll acknowledge, anyone who's got a question or wants to present a case, go ahead. Anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Is that someone calling out a first name? Anyone?
Hannah,
thank you so much. Yes, go ahead, share with us your concern, your question.
Hi, so I have a patient on my case list who was a 17-year-old who had presented to an outside hospital with concern for, she had presented with left lower quadrant pain, was found to have a positive urine pregnancy. Her beta HCG was 2000, and there was nothing in the uterus. There was concern for ectopic, and she was actually transferred to our hospital where I managed her for a higher level of care. And so when she got here, we did transabdominal ultrasound, and she had a very thin stripe. There was concern for a right adnexal mass that looked concerning for an ectopic. The outside hospital imaging images were not available to us, but the read had been read as concern for right ectopic pregnancy, concern for right ovarian.
I have to stop you there for a moment. Okay. I just have to stop you for a moment. This is an issue to everyone listening in. If you've got a case of rule out ectopic pregnancy, the presence of an adnexal mass is potentially very unforgiving, because if there's a positive HCG, there's going to be a corpus luteum of pregnancy. So you don't know if this adnexal mass is a pathological ectopic or a physiological corpus luteum of pregnancy. So don't place too much weight in your presentation to all of you on the presence of an adnexal mass. Sure, mention it, but acknowledge that, you know, this could be physiological. So, sorry, go ahead, Hannah.
Oh, no, that's exactly hitting the nail on the head. So, ultimately, there was also free fluid in her abdomen, so there was high concern for ruptured ectopic pregnancy. She was consented, and we went back for laparoscopy, and on laparoscopy, she had hemoperitoneum, a 6-centimeter adnexal mass on her right side, and a right tubal ovarian torsion. Intraoperatively, I made the decision to remove her ovaries and tube, thinking that it was an ovarian ectopic pregnancy, being kind of anchored by the preoperative imaging being concerned for ovarian ectopic pregnancy. Ultimately, it ended up not being an ovarian ectopic pregnancy, obviously, because those are so rare. And unfortunately, it was likely an early IUP. And it was likely a corpus luteum that had forced on itself as well as the tube, and then also ruptured, causing the hemoperitoneum, and also just like was really edematous, and that's probably why it had that appearance. So I don't know how to
because you went in on a case of rule out ectopic pregnancy. You removed an ovary of a young woman, and she
exactly.
probably had an IUP. Is that
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Okay. folks, this is, and you're not the only one with this. There are a couple of general principles here. Okay. The first thing I want all of you to keep in mind is, especially when it comes to GYN. Folks, can I ask you, please, those with little kids in the background, please, can you separate yourselves from the kids because the rest of us can't hear. Sorry about that. With GYN, between you and your two examiners, you're the only one who sets their eyeballs on that admixer.
Yeah.
So they can't argue with you.
Yeah.
Folks, please don't talk if you're on the line, because we've got a live line here. I'd ask you please all to be quiet. Thank you. So the point is, you can say, and I'm not suggesting you should be dishonest, but you can say anything as to what you saw, and they can't argue with you. So in a case like this, you just think aloud. You present the case like you did, and you say, I took this patient to the OR. My options were, I could have waited and watched the HCG curve, but she had severe pain, and on that basis alone, I felt I needed to go in. When I got in, there was a hemiperitoneum. There was evidence of rupture. Whether this was a rupture ectopic or a ovarian ectopic or a ruptured corpus luteum was somewhat irrelevant, because when I observed the ovary, it was bleeding from the ovary. And as much as I tried to conserve the ovary, this was not surgically feasible. So it was unfortunate that I had to remove an ovary in a 17-year-old. And at the end of the day, it turned out not even to be an ectopic pregnancy. And the question is, could I have potentially saved the pregnancy? And there's a possibility that may have been the case. Arguably, I could have saved the pregnancy, but I would build up the issue of pain. But in the presence of an acute abdomen, I felt an obligation to go in. And so my hand was tied, and I've obviously thought about this case a lot in the interim. And if I were to manage this patient again tomorrow, given the fact that I had prospectively, I think I would manage this patient exactly the same, even though, unfortunately, it had a negative outcome of losing an ovary and potentially losing a pregnancy. But in the face of the acute abdominal pain, I really didn't have much of a choice. I did think about, you can just add this as well, I did think about giving progesterone to maintain the pregnancy, if this was a corpus luteum of pregnancy, before I got the pathology back. But since this pregnancy, I'm making this up now, since this pregnancy wasn't a desired pregnancy, I chose against that option. Because just keep in mind, they can always say, couldn't have given progesterone to, even though you removed the ovary, you could have given progesterone and carried this pregnancy through until the placenta started making its own progesterone. So, Anna, how does that kind of a response sound to you?
That's really helpful. Thank you. Do you think, though, that just one follow-up question is,
sure,
because I have thought about this a lot, and I do think that I would have managed it differently. I think I actually would have untorsed the ovary and possibly...
That's
like,
the correct treatment. There's a practice bulletin from about 5 years ago entitled Torsion in Adolescence, and what they say there is to be quick to take the patient to the OR, but slow to remove the adnexa. In other words,
exactly.
Untwist.
Yeah.
So if you want to take that approach, you can say, I think the decision to take it to the OR was the correct one. The only thing I would do differently, I would have been a little bit more trying to conserve the ovary. But you can add... But even with this, when I untorsed, it didn't really pink up very nicely. So I think this hemorrhage had been there for some time, but ischemic damage had already been done. But I don't think in this particular case, that would have allowed you to save the ovary. But in principle, one wants to be as conservative as possible. How does that sound to you, Anna?
That sounds awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Excellent. So, folks, listen, we'll keep this teleseminar fairly short. The principles of both cases presented, one by Matilda and one by Hannah, are actually the same. You need to just be open and honest, discuss the case as it happened, talk out with the examiner, talk out aloud your thought processes as you came to your various management decisions. And if you do that, you're going to be really just fine. So what else can I tell you? Those of you that have the exam this week, obviously I want to wish you all the best of luck. And we do want to hear the positive results. My staff and faculty love to get feedback from you folks. So please let us know how it goes. We're not interested in the questions you were asked. We just want to get the results of how that hopefully you did well, and we're very confident with our experience that you will be successful. I also want to share with you that our next teleseminar will be in 2 weeks' time on the 20th of October, and that's it. Matilda and Hannah, thank you so much. Very good cases. And to all of you joining, please, even though it's the end of the year, please invite your friends and colleagues to join us. And those who are taking the exam next year, and likewise, invite them to join us. I will tell you, just as an aside, this is peak season as far as mock orals are concerned. And if your exam is in October, it might be too late already. I don't know, and I'm not trying to instill fear with you folks. I'm just being open and honest with you folks. I know we are inundated with mock oral requests. We may have reached our saturation point, in which case, if you're taking the exam this month, we may not be able to help you. Next month, we still got space, but there might still be a little bit of space. But I know if we're not fully saturated, we're almost there. So the reason I'm really saying this is if you're interested, if you're planning on having a mock oral, don't leave it till the last minute. Register now. Just to make sure we can get you in, because I would hate for you to have been planning, and then at the last minute phone us and then say, and we tell you we can't do it. So just keep that in mind. Once again, good luck to those examining this coming week, and we'll speak, the rest of us, in 2 weeks' time on the 20th of October. Thank you so much, and this then concludes our teleseminar. Thanks again, everyone, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.